Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. Today on our podcast, Donut Go Anywhere.
You guys eating any of these?
We had a couple pieces of bacon here. In my sick mind, I thought about layering it on top of a glazed donut and eating it.
Krispy Kreme goes back for seconds. The donut chain going public again in an IPO a generation after its first launch.
Last year, we sold 1.3 billion donuts. I love that. It's great. One third of our donuts, our dozens, are actually gifted to others.
And China's President Xi is standing up to bullies and pushing the Chinese Communist Party forward, or maybe backward, to its roots. CNBC's Beijing Bureau Chief, Eunice Yoon.
A lot of people here are also worried about where President Xi Jinping is taking the Communist Party, because it has evolved a lot since it was founded in 1921.
It's Thursday, July 1st, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. And Andrew, these are the donuts that you can eat lots and lots of. Not the heavy ones.
Glazed donuts.
You could go
for
double
digits. Exciting day.
Today.
It's not National Donut Day, but it's close.
First up today on the podcast, an IPO bonanza. This week alone, 18 companies are seeking to list on the U.S. markets. That's the most in a single week since 2004. On the docket, Chinese ride-hailing slash everything app Didi, which successfully listed in one of the biggest IPOs of the year so far, as well as Clear, the biometric screening company that you see at airports, and SentinelOne, the massive cybersecurity company that clocked the highest valued cybersecurity IPO ever on Wednesday. With their help, we closed out the first half of the year with 213 IPOs, which together raised over $70 billion. It's higher than the full year average for the last 10 years. So, pretty impressive. The last time we saw this kind of activity was back in the 1996-2000 era, aka the dot-com bubble. This past June alone was the busiest month for IPOs since the year 2000. Ironically, 2000 was also the year that today's IPO du jour first tried to hit the public markets.
Lots and lots and lots of donuts.
It's Krispy Kreme. Over 80 years old, the iconic donut chain has now gone public twice. First, as I said, in 2000. Then it was bought for over $1 billion and taken private in 2016. And now, 5 years later, it's back. You'll hear more about that listing in a second.
I have even more. I'll show you. I'm all set up here.
But before we dive into the dozens and dozens of today's donut moments, a little warning. You haven't heard the end of the 2021 IPO parade. There are 87 companies that have already filed to go public, and plenty that are still private but expected to list, or at least file, this year. Warby Parker, Instacart, Flipkart, and, of course, Robinhood among them. Okay, back to the donuts. Here's Andrew.
Leslie Picker has a closer look at the donut maker. And Leslie, you know, these donut stories have a special place in my heart and stomach. So tell me what's
going on.
Maybe not, by the way, in the eyes of investors, though, oddly enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't always square your appetite with what is going to happen in the markets. Krispy Kreme, of course, returning to the public markets today after 5 years in private hands. The 84-year-old donut maker priced its shares below the range it had been marketing to investors at $17 each, but the company did wind up selling more stock than expected for an offering of about $500 million. Now, the pricing implies a market cap of $2.7 billion, which is still double what JAB, an investment firm, paid when taking Krispy Kreme going private in 2016. To some, though, a lower than expected pricing may not come as a surprise here. The company did manage to grow its top line 15% last year. It's evolving the business to focus on so-called hot light theater shops and delivery, but its net losses have been widening, and consumer taste, of course, has been shifting toward healthier options in recent years. Still, Krispy Kreme is debuting into a listings market that appears to be about as open as it's ever been, with near record activity this week on the heels of the hottest quarter for IPOs in two decades. Krispy Kreme set to begin trading on the NASDAQ on today under the symbol DNUT, Andrew.
In terms of the growth story, how much of it is U.S. versus international at this point?
It's mostly U.S. at this point for them. I'm under the impression that you will be at one of their kind of new experiential shops. Delivery has been primarily a U.S.-focused venture for them. So they do, you know, tend to be a little bit more focused on the U.S.
And is the free donut for your vaccine card, is that deal still open for business?
That is a good question. I did not see that mentioned in the prospectus. The top risk factor was COVID. But as it pertains to the free donut for your vaccine card, you'll have to go and ask them today and see if something tells me you'll still be getting free donuts regardless of vaccination when you're there.
We will discuss. We will discuss. Leslie, thank you.
Andrew. Krispy Kreme's here. I can't believe you only had two so far.
I had half of one.
Yeah, Joe had
just
half
so
of
you
one
see,
and he
I
said,
know
I get it.
Not box. Not
okay,
half
you
box.
I just want you to see.
Half a donut.
You said, I got a lot here. This is
one,
this
two,
not.
One, two, three,
this
four,
is,
five, six,
we
seven.
Still got
You've got some ground
there's
to pick
more,
up.
By the way, this is what I can keep on my lap. I think I've got maybe double this.
Oh,
all
my God.
For myself.
That's so nice.
You've got some eating to do.
They knew, they did their market research for who was going to be able to get the job done with those things. I would eat, you know what, we already talked about it, and it was kind of gross, we don't want to share,
what?
But if I was in ancient Rome, I'd eat all these, and then I'd go, and then I'd do it again. I would, but since we're not, I can't, so.
But he did say, I understand why Andrew can eat nine of these as soon as he took a bite.
Right, so they're so good,
they're light, Andrew, they're tasty. They're great.
We had a couple pieces of bacon here from the NASDAQ, too, because they're having a... In my sick mind, I thought about layering it on top of a glazed donut and eating it. I did, but I didn't do it.
No, you didn't.
I didn't do it. I'm being good.
Tempting.
It might be a very tasty thing to do.
Well,
let's talk about that.
Remember, we had some that are like that. It's the best combination in the world.
We've had some great donuts, bacon donuts.
Yeah.
People know this is the way to my heart. But we are going to talk about the IPO right now because we have a very special guest, Krispy Kreme, going public. This is the second time around for the company. It went public back in 2000, but years later, the stock had tumbled following an accounting scandal and underwent a restructuring. Then in 2016, it was taken private by JAB through a $1.35 billion acquisition. Today, it is listing on the NASDAQ under the ticker DNUT after its IPO priced at $17 per share. Should say it's below the expected range. We want to talk about that as well. Joining us right now, first on CNBC from its Times Square location, Krispy Kreme CEO Mike Tattersfield. Mike, it's great to see you this morning. I've got the donuts here. We're eating a lot of them, so thank you for that. But it is a big day for you.
It's a great day for us. It's an 84-year-old brand. And, you know, as you think about it, we're always trying to build the most loved sweet treat brand in the world. The transformation that this company's done in the last 5 years has been incredible. We've worked on our brand, we've worked on the culture, and we actually changed the business model. And we really created an omni-channel approach where we leverage these amazing donut shops like the one I'm in today, and then really get fresh donuts to where the customers are. So that's what we've been doing, and it's been an incredible ride so far.
Mike, I want to talk to you about the valuation because it did come in lower than expected. In terms of where you thought you were going to be with investors, even just days ago, what happened?
Listen, 5 years ago, we came in and bought the business for a little north of $1 billion. The value today is 2.5 times the value of when we purchased the company. So when we talked to investors and they saw that we doubled the revenue and doubled the EBITDA during this time frame, they really loved the traction that we're doing and the journey ahead, both in the United States market as well as global, because it's about this shared occasions. We sell in dozens, and we really drive occasions. We do that exceptionally well, and just deliver donuts and build it in gifting. And Andrew, I know you got a lot of dozens in your house right now, but you can share them as well.
Trust me, I'm going to have to gift a lot of these away. I can't eat all of this. But the question I ask in terms of expansion, you've been growing fast. The question is, are you growing at the expense of profit in terms of net profit?
So if you think about it, when we doubled the EBITDA, you know, doubled the revenue and doubled the EBITDA, one of the things that we did in the transformation on the brand, we used to be a franchisee in the U.S. We bought back the system. So we have a controlled system where 85% of the system today in the U.S. is where we make our donuts. We then use our 400 donut shops, our theater shop. There's only 400 in the world. I love that, right? So the aspect of keeping the donuts special. But instead of opening up random donut shops everywhere, we actually use an omni-channel approach. So we leverage these theater shops, which are amazing. I'm sure you've been in it when you see our hot light or our glaze line. And then follow where the customer's at. So take the journey, whether it's a fresh shop in New York City, where we actually produce here and then send donuts to them, an e-commerce model where the consumer can order gifting or delivery, as well as in the wholesale space where we now deliver fresh donuts to select grocers or select convenience shops around the globe.
So, Mike, I don't know if this is a hard question or not, and I don't know what to do about it. But in a day and age where people are supposed to be moving away from carbs, right? Carbs and sugar. This is a 190-calorie treat, but you typically eat more than one. What do you think, just trend-wise, in terms of the movement away, frankly, from treats and what that does or what that may mean or not to your business long-term?
So I love the indulgence space, and Krispy Kreme works incredibly well right within it. Our customers engage us about 2.5 times a year, and they engage us on occasions. So as you're having those dozens, it's about shared dozens that we focus on celebration gifting. And the customer is always looking for a sweet treat. And I know the world's not a really good place, in a bland place if you don't have a sweet treat. So it's really about the opportunity of how do we build on that? We're really proud of what we do. And if you can get on occasions, and you think about gifting, you know, Mother's Day that just came by. If you can have a little kid basically send their mom a dozen donuts, we compete against flowers, right? It's a whole different occasion. It's celebrations. It's an amazing part of what this brand does. Again, those theater shops that are so special, right? But doing fresh donuts everywhere, I'll give you one little snapshot. Last year, we sold 1.3 billion donuts. I love that. It's great.
But do you imagine you're going to get pressure from investors or ESG investors? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, Coca-Cola has taken a ribbing for a very long time about the sugar in their drinks. Are you going to have to come up with other products in terms of the mix long term, you think? Or do you just lean into the donut?
When you think about it, you know, doing those 1.3 billion donuts, we lean into the donuts. It's clearly the opportunity. The shared occasions, right? We're designed, actually, we're in the normal sweet treat space, it tends to be an individual occasion. These are designed for sharing and gifting. 1/3 of our donuts, our dozens, are actually gifted to others. So in that space, we grew 20% last year, even with that low incidence rate of 2.5 times, we grew 20% because we focus on the occasions of the donuts.
Right. Mike, can you speak a little bit about whatever inflationary pressures you may or may not be feeling right now, both in terms of wages, in terms of food ingredients and the like?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, we'll always face headwinds. If you can imagine, 2020 was a year where Krispy Kreme really shown itself to be an incredible company. It had its one of its most profitable years in its history. So we will, if you can do that in a year of COVID and really start to transform your business, we will always be able to manage these types of costs. And if you think about it, that shared occasion on an accessible price point gives us a lot of opportunity to move.
Right. What's the company's position on wages and minimum wage right now?
Yeah, we're always competitive in the marketplace, and we'll always continue to do that. The one thing I always focus on in our company is about where every Krispy Kremer, that's who I call folks that work at Krispy Kreme, can reach their dreams and goals and wherever they'd like to go, and then they can grow along with the company. I'd love them, one of them, to be the CEO of the company one day.
Two final quick questions. One of the things that really hurt the company years ago was its overexpansion. And I know you're trying to avoid that overexpansion, but to grow, you're going to have to expand. How do you see that working?
So again, I talked about those hot light shops, right? There's just 400 of these around the globe. We want to keep them special. We're going to keep them special, but it's building access points. So if we build an access point inside of a Tesco or inside of a Walmart, where we'll do those fresh donuts from the theater shop to them, done daily. So it's the fresh donut experience that you get in the shop, and that's how we see the growth. Building these big theater shops is a past, but today we actually really focus on how to get access to the customers, and we keep our donut shops special.
Mike, we got to run. You've given away 2 million donuts to those who have a vaccine and a vaccine card. How many are you expecting to give away by the end of the year? And by the way, when people come in for the free donut, do they end up buying more?
They do. So last year we gave away 30 million donuts, right? Really could be helpful to the healthcare, seniors, teachers. This year when we did the CDC program, where you get a donut every day you come in, and folks we're past 2 million donuts. People, because of the distance sometimes when they come visit the shop, tend to pick up a dozen, and they share their donuts, Andrew. So those donuts you have, make sure you spread them around the building or your family.
Okay. Mike, we wish you lots of luck. I promise to share these donuts. I will need to share these donuts. And we look forward to following your progress.
I look forward to seeing you, and thank all the Krispy Kremers around the globe. It's a great day for Krispy Kreme. Take care.
Cheers. Becky, are you guys eating any of these?
Half.
Joe's eaten half, but we're eyeing them. They're tempting. I've managed to maintain so far, but they are tempting, and they're all sitting
like
here looking back at us.
We have so many different kinds, and I'd like to try every one.
Next on Squawk Pod, on the ground in China, the day after President Xi Jinping's bold speech to his people and to the rest of the world, CNBC's Beijing Bureau Chief Eunice Yun.
A lot of people here do want to have more and more rights, but in terms of what President Xi thinks is the best to try to make China great again, apparently does not believe that is the best way forward.
That conversation right after this. This is Squawk Pod on this July 1st with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Joe.
Has China been bullied lately? That doesn't seem like a country you bully easily. But if you were thinking about it, don't, because China won't be bullied. That was President Xi's message to foreign powers in a speech overnight. Eunice Yun joins us now with more. Fill us in, Eunice. Good day.
Well, Joe, today was an important day for China. President Xi Jinping was projecting strength on this 100th anniversary of the founding of the Chinese Communist Party. So President Xi Jinping, as you said, had warned in this speech that any foreign force attempting to bully China would, quote, find themselves on a collision course with a great wall of steel forged by China's 1.4 billion people. Now, his tough talk matched the show of force that we saw today. A lot of military hardware at this event, which featured a flypast of military choppers and China's own stealth fighter, the J-20. President Xi also pledged that China would build up its military. He reiterated the commitments that the country has to the reunification of Taiwan and stability of Hong Kong. He also hailed a new world order. Now, security in Hong Kong is very tight. The city has an anniversary of its own, the 24th anniversary of the Hong Kong handover. Now, normally on July 1st every year, the city holds a peaceful demonstration to mark this occasion. However, the authorities are not allowing it this year, citing pandemic restrictions. However, activists believe it's also because the authorities want to clamp down on protesters. For the past year, since the national security law has been put in place, the city has rounded up a lot of opposition and critical voices, journalists as well. As you guys well know, the pro-democracy paper, the Apple Daily, was essentially dismantled. And some of the executives, at least one, was released on bail, though the others are still being detained. And since then, the Apple Daily's parent, Next Digital, said it was going to stop its operations as of today. And there has been a chill that has been cast on a lot of the other press. So some of the smaller independent papers have been taking some precautionary measures, saying that they're going to relocate their servers, take down editorials, and suspend donations until they could figure out what to do next. Guys?
A lot of interesting things and thoughts as you were speaking, Eunice. In the old days, the Cold War, it was all Soviet Union all the time. The SALT talks, the strategic, you know, trying to limit nuclear weapons for years and years and years. Those were the two superpowers as China was in the background. But where do you get power? You get it from economic strength. And the Soviet Union does not, Russia, the former Soviet Union, obviously big shortfalls there in terms of the world stage, the opposite of China, which is an economic power that you can't possibly minimize or not understand how great that is. And where does that come from? You put 1.4 billion people to work in a single-minded way, and it's going to happen. So I hear him. And we do respect him, but we have a problem with a lot of things China's doing right now. So this is setting up some interesting years ahead.
Yeah, well, a lot of people here as well. Joe, I think a lot of people here are also worried about where President Xi Jinping is taking the Communist Party, because it has evolved a lot since it was founded in 1921. I mean, it started with a bunch of revolutionary kind of folks, and then eventually had to make some changes after Chairman Mao Zedong, in his one-man rule, had kind of created a lot of disasters here, like famine. So since then, another leader came in, Deng Xiaoping, reformer, and as you had mentioned, economic power plugged into that global economic system. Lots of people got rich very quickly, when you think about it in terms of decades. And then now President Xi Jinping is kind of moving the party back into one-man rule, where he has this personality cult around him. There's been so much propaganda about Mao Zedong and about how similar President Xi is with Mao Zedong. And so there's a lot of questions here as to whether or not one-man rule is actually going to be good for the country.
Eunice,
since it
earlier
wasn't
this
so
week,
good in the past.
Earlier this week, a lot being written in the journal by either Holman Jenkins or Bill McGurn, one of them about Milton Friedman, who said this is going to be a great power, China. And as the country becomes more capitalistic and becomes much more powerful, human rights, by definition, are going to flourish. And the point of the piece in the journal was that has not happened. And the country has flourished, but not at the same time with opening up like the West in terms of human rights and freedom and privacy and everything else. So it's kind of an enigma. Actually, someone very smart called it an enigma. Was that Russia? I don't know. Called someplace the enigma wrapped in a riddle, right?
I think there are a lot of folks overseas, and I think within the United States and the West at large, who would say that it was kind of a mistake on the part of the West, that they miscalculated, that they thought that China would eventually become much more open politically as it became much more open economically. However, as you had noted, that hasn't really happened. I mean, we saw some of it. In terms of the internet opening things up, I think a lot of people here do want to have more and more rights. And if you talk to people privately, they do want to have more open discussions. But, you know, in terms of what President Xi thinks is the best to try to make China great again, apparently does not believe that is the best way forward.
That saying's been taken, Eunice.
Eunice, what do you hear from U.S. business leaders, or at least leaders of businesses that are headquartered in the U.S. but do a lot of business in China? Do you hear any murmurings at all, even under their breath, that they're going to somehow leave or that they're trying behind the scenes to have conversations with the government? Is that even on the table?
They are always having conversations with the government. I don't know of many companies or business people who believe that the Chinese consumer is going to be their future, actually thinking of leaving. The strategy, though, has been changing, where maybe they're trying to buttress their business a little bit better, where they might have more operations here, and instead they're setting up like manufacturing facilities where they're going to be, selling into the Chinese market, and then kind of having their China business that's kind of hived off from the business for the rest of the world. But it's a very delicate dance right now. And you could also see a lot of companies, not only foreign companies, but Chinese companies as well, really trying closely with government policy. I mean, I think you saw that with Didi as well. I think
it was interesting that they
said that they're going to be pushing EV.
Eunice, see what John Donahue said earlier this week? We are a brand of China and for China.
Right.
So that's your businesses.
Yep.
Taking the moral stand against things
but
that
this goes to the
how
whole,
about the NBA? Can you say NBA? How's the NBA think about China?
We had that interview with Joe Tsai a week and a half ago where we put the question to him, and clearly he supported the Chinese government, as I think we all imagined he probably would. The question, though, is there some kind of constructive engagement going on behind the scenes? Clearly, if you come out publicly and say something negative, you can't have that engagement behind the scenes. And I just don't know whether there is the engagement behind the scenes.
Well,
after looking at the last couple of decades, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of
these guys,
conversation behind the scenes taking place.
Money, 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 money.
Cheese will be next.
Still to come on Squawk Pod.
You will let us know when you EV yourself. I mean, that's close, right?
The road race to electric vehicles. And one way or another, they're going to find you. Those donut carbs, that is.
Those are horrible facts, Andrew, though. Those are really horrible facts. That a bag of potato chips, you got to run for 20 minutes then.
Roll alpha, up track.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Joe Kernan along with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Travel for the upcoming holiday weekend expected to reach levels not seen since before the pandemic. AAA forecasting that about 47 million people plan to travel between today and Monday. Auto travel expected to be the highest on record, also setting a record. Rental car prices with the daily rate now averaging $166. That's a 140% increase from 2 years ago, $166. And I suspect, Joe, it's like $166 for like a Yugo, right? It's going to be, you know, that little car and they're going to jack that. So I don't even know what a full size car would cost.
Right. That's a good point. I haven't heard that in a while. The Yugo.
They still make
remember?
That.
I do.
I don't know. But, you know, I feel like you're going to get a Toyota Corolla for $166. It's pricey. It's pricey. Then if you need to get a minivan or an SUV, forget about it. It's $400 or $500 a day.
Right. You will let us know when you EV yourself. I mean, that's close, right? You're looking around. Where are you in the process right now? That's coming, right?
I have a lease going. I still have a lease. Yeah, it's during the pandemic, you know, I switched out cars. We got, because of we wanted the three rows, we have a Volkswagen Atlas now. And I think there's about 2 years left on
that.
About 2 years left on the lease. So call me in 2 years.
Okay. Call you what? Oh, just it doesn't matter. Just
about
call
the
you.
EV. Then
about
once
the
I, then I would switch out the car.
It's harder if you live in the city, I think, because you don't necessarily have a place where you can charge it every night. I mean, it just if you're parking on the street, that's tricky.
Right. So we spend a fortune and we park in a parking lot in the city. And actually, at our parking lot, there are some Tesla chargers. I don't know if there are chargers for other brands yet. And right. I don't know if you have to pay extra for those spots. Right. That,
or if you get guaranteed
I've never talked to them about that.
Yeah, if you get guaranteed every night.
Just realize that. So that's going to be, yeah, we've got spaces here per month, which are probably outrageous already. And then if you want to be near a charger, you pay this much.
It might cost more.
That's coming.
I've never asked.
Coming.
Yeah.
It's trickier for people who live in the city.
You figure, Andrew, 10 minutes of a brisk walk per half donut. So I've already signed on to that. 20 minutes for the entire donut to jog or walk, to burn.
Seriously?
Yeah, that was Andrew's estimate.
I wear a heart rate monitor, and usually if I go running, even just for like a 2-mile run, I can usually burn around 200 calories in maybe 18 minutes. So if each one's 190 calories, my thought was, or you could do a really brisk walk. You could probably.
Those are horrible facts, Andrew, though. Those are really horrible facts that for two, you know, a bag of potato chips, you got to run for 20 minutes then. It's just, if you're going to look at things that way, you're never going to eat anything again.
That's the show for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, listen and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to tell us what you think, either on Apple Podcasts or via Twitter. We're at Squawk CNBC. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.